So while you're grabbing your sandwiches and meeting new friends at your table, could I take a moment to welcome you all and invite our host for today, Dilys Bertelsen, to the microphone to say a few words. Thanks, Dilys.
Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. It is my pleasure to welcome you all here. And I have to tell you, we have a full house. There are a few vacant seats, but we have a full house. So that's fabulous news, because this forum is really, really important and very close to our hearts. This is a space that Windsor spends a lot of time in that fundraising area, recruiting executives, senior fundraisers, CEOs, and really fundraisers across all levels within organisations. So this is very, very special to us. And Nigel and I particularly have been working over the last number of months, in fact, I should say years, to deliver this sort of forum for you. So I'm so pleased that we'll be able to get it together, Nigel, and put on today's forum. So thank you so much for your input. Thank you. Thank you also to our esteemed panel. We're very, very fortunate to have Wendy Scaife, Carmel McMillan, and of course Nigel Harris on our panel. And very, very thankful for Simone to be facilitating today's discussion. So thank you all very much indeed for being here, panel, and thank you to you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us this afternoon. I'd like to formally welcome Simone to you, and a short bio, really, given Simone's achievements over the last number of years. Simone is the CEO of the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital Foundation, and has been since December last year. But prior to that, was 17 years with QUT in senior leadership roles, with expertise in major philanthropic campaign strategy and execution, exceeding KPIs, as you'll hear about in a second, and delivering the impact on education, medical research, and donor relations. Simone led and managed teams that raised $400 million for the university's strategic priorities. Some of her other achievements included rollout of the QUT First Giving Day, which resulted in 1.6 million being secured within 24 hours. Building the sector-leading Equity Scholarship Fund, to more than 60 million. And the establishment of the country's most successful workplace giving program. Exceptional achievements, Simone. Simone is a certified fundraising executive. She is also the director of the Asia Pacific Board of the Council for Advancement and Support of Education, and has a Bachelor of Business in Communications and an MBA from QUT. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in very safe hands this afternoon, so it gives me very great pleasure. Would you please join me in welcoming Simone back to the stage?
Thank you very much, Dilys, for that warm welcome and introduction. It has been an incredible journey over the last 20-odd years of my career, and I hope that with the other panel members today, I might have some insights to offer as we unpack some of the questions that we will be having a conversation about. But first things first, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands where we meet today and pay respect to their elders, past, present and emerging, and acknowledge that these have been places of learning for many, many years. I'd also like to just give you a few tips about housekeeping. For those of you who have been here before, you may know where the facilities are, but those of you who haven't, straight down the hallway and to the left. And of course, in the very, very rare circumstance that we have an emergency of any sort, the advice or the suggestion is we just follow the Tattersall's staff and they will lead us safely out of the building. But I've been to this building quite a few times and I've never seen anything like that happen, so I'm sure it won't today. So it gives me great pleasure, as Dillis said, to sort of chair this next session, which will be really about unpacking and garnering some insights from our panel members. And I hope that it will really be a conversation. And to that end, I would like to bring to your attention, and I guess, have I got the clicker here?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you drive for me, Sarah. I'd like to put up, we have an SMS number. Oh yes, which is at the bottom. Please note that number. If you'd like to key that into your phone now, we're going to use that number as a way for you to pose your questions. We will have some time for some Q&A at the end. So there are no such thing as obviously a dumb question or any other question like that. So please send us your questions and we will endeavour to get to them at the end of today's panel conversation. So, time to introduce our panel. And I will introduce them all separately and ask them to join me up here on the stage. So our first panel member this afternoon is Carmel McMillan. Carmel, would you like to come up? Carmel is a board and subcommittee chair and a non-executive director with extensive expertise in marketing and corporate strategy. She brings to the board customer insights and a highly developed commercial acumen. And she has a very laser focus on profitable top line growth. She's skilled in strategically developing and diversifying income streams for organisations, and she actively champions a customer experience culture. She's focused on driving board performance and risk accountabilities and governance frameworks. In recent years, she has expanded her skills and knowledge to include fundraising. That deserves a pause. Fundraising. To add further value to the boards upon which she sits. And I think, Carmel, everyone in here who is working in a not-for-profit organisation would applaud you very much for getting that extra knowledge and skills in the fundraising arena. Her current board portfolio encompasses corporate, family, not-for-profit organisations in property, disabilities, health and the arts sectors. And she has more than 30 years experience across all of those fields that I mentioned earlier. So a warm welcome to you, Carmel. Our second panel member today is Nigel Harris. Please come up, Nigel. As we heard in Dillis's earlier comments, Nigel and Dillis are, I guess, the masterminds and the planners of today's session. And many of you would know Nigel from his long-term experience and expertise in the sector. But if you don't, I'll read you some of his information. First and foremost, he's the Chief Executive Officer of the Mater Foundation, which is one of Australia's largest healthcare foundations. And he has been with the Mater for 24 years and has worked in fundraising for 35 years. And I think that almost deserves a round of applause on its own, Michael. You are a true believer and a true survivor in this sector. Nigel has an MBA and qualifications in public relations and marketing, and he also holds the Certified Fundraising Executive accreditation. In 2012, he was awarded the Arthur Venn Fundraising Professional of the Year, which is a very esteemed award given by the FIA, and he's a fellow and a past chair of the Fundraising Institute of Australia. He's a former CFRE board member and he's currently serving on the board of the UK-based Institute of Sustainable Philanthropy. Nigel is, I guess in his other spare time, a director for the Act for Kids, which many of you would know is a Queensland-based charity, and he serves on the board for Community Council for Australia. He's also a graduate of the AICD, and a fellow Institute of Managers, and a fellow of the Institute of Managers, and he is the past president of the Rotary Club of Albany Creek.
and he has been very active in all endeavours and fields in the community and healthcare for more than 40 years. So welcome, Nigel. We look forward to your insights today. And last, and most certainly not least, is Professor Wendy Scaife. Please come up, Wendy.
Definitely shortest.
Wendy is the director for the Australian Centre for Philanthropy and Nonprofit Studies at QUT. And Wendy leads a respected research, consulting and teaching team that delivers evidence, learning and impacts for the not-for-profit, social enterprise and philanthropy sectors. She brings more than three decades experience in non-for-profit life and has received two Vice Chancellor Awards for excellence for her academic work. Wendy provides service on government bodies, philanthropic grants committees and international research boards. In fact, we were having a little joke earlier. I think for like many of us in this world, we find it hard to say no, and Wendy is always one of those people who says yes and gives whatever she says yes to her all. So we really appreciate you being here, Wendy. Wendy chairs a community heritage organisation. She was previously a CEO, so you see some themes here, now being an academic, of a health not-for-profit organisation. And Wendy's PhD was about improving the marketing and funding of Australian medical research. I know firsthand, being a former student of Wendy's and working with her closely at QUT, that she's an absolute champion of the philanthropic sector and has a true commitment to building capacity through the ACPNS. So it's great to have your perspectives today, Wendy. So we will kick off with the five burning or key questions that were the focus of today's forum, and I guess the reason that all of you have given us your Friday to be here. So what I will do is we will put the questions up on the slide, and then through the different perspectives and lenses that we have here through our three colleagues, we will start to draw out some perspectives and maybe some themes about responses that we can then further discuss maybe in the Q&A session. So, let's kick off. Could I ask you, Sarah, to put the first question up for me, if you wouldn't mind? Thank you. In a world where benchmarking and data, if your worlds are anything like mine, are everything, or are they? The first question that we have for the panel is, what are you measuring in fundraising? And why are you measuring it? What difference does it make and what value does it add? So I think I might start this question in no particular order, but we might kick off with you, Carmel, wearing your board hat, about what you see happening at the board table about measurement around fundraising and fundraising excellence.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Well, on top of the boards that I sit on, we aim to measure a range of quantitative and qualitative KPIs to really look at the effectiveness of the impact and also the efficiency of the spend.
We do have a microphone. Thank you.
I thought I had a big enough voice as it was. So to really look to create a balance between the two. But let me just step back a little bit to say why, in a way, that came about. So I was fortunate on one of the boards I sit on that last year we went to Dan Pilotta's Evolve workshop that was held here in Brisbane, and the whole board attended this workshop. Now Dan, for many of the fundraisers in the room, would know that he speaks a lot about the overhead myth and how in the US charities have been rewarded for the little they spend on overhead as opposed to being rewarded for the impact that they're making. Now, back in 2013, when Dan did his first TED Talk, the three leading non-for-profit reporters of data denounced his overhead ratio, basically saying that basically denouncing that this was a valid indicator for non-profit performance. They asked donors and non-profit organisations to pay attention to other factors such as transparency, leadership, governance and results, as opposed to overheads. They provided a list of resources online, and these resources are there still to this day for you to access, to have a look at assisting in this transition away from a pure focus on overheads. They provided information such as demonstrating impact, understanding and conveying true costs, sharing data about charities' performance. Now you may say, okay, well that's US data and what does that have to do with us? Well, I think, you know, you could say, well, are US charities really that different than Australia? Well, I sat in this room a few months ago and listened to Gary John speak from the ACMC about the new portal that they're releasing and how they wanted charities to start in this next year putting more and more information about impact to improve the level of comparison. So I think it really begs the question that boards and management need to be sitting around the table and having more in-depth discussion about the alternatives that we have as opposed to just discussing overheads. We need to be asking more questions about how do we get a more balanced discussion in regards to those alternatives, because otherwise we will just have the media talking about pure overheads as opposed to impact and the good we're doing.
Yes, thanks very much, Carol. I think you make a very good point there about a balanced discussion and not just focusing on one metric as being the be-all and end-all about how we measure our impact and our performance. So Nigel, I'm sure you might have a few comments to add, perhaps wearing multiple hats, but perhaps particularly as the CEO of the Mater Foundation.
A little over a decade ago, I had the good fortune to receive a fellowship to attend a non-profit management leadership program at Harvard Business School. And I remember in the first plenary session attended, we were challenged by a quote from Friedrich Nietzsche, the philosopher, who talks about the most fundamental, most common form of human stupidity is forgetting what you're there to accomplish. And the rejoinder to that was that our job as leaders was to remind people what they're there to accomplish. So if in fact that's our focus, a question that comes up for me repeatedly is this idea of where we focus the measurement of what we do in the context of what we're there to accomplish. So if our job in the non-profit sector, particularly around fundraising, is to save money or focus on costs, then we're doing a very good job of measuring costs. But I don't think that's our job. I think our job has a much larger scope. We're actually serving a social purpose. We're trying to resolve problems that have a much more longitudinal view. So unless our approach to this is similarly longitudinal and measured in a longitudinal form, we're out of whack with that question of what we're trying to accomplish. And I think, again, we can look at what the market is telling us, both through research and experience, is that people are actually drawn to this question of the outcomes we're accomplishing and the impact that we're making through the work that we do. So how do we actually address that question? So I think there's a real challenge in the sector, and particularly in and around fundraising, but not limited to that, in thinking about what we're measuring, because I still see the conversations that are focus back into this cost metric focus, both within organisations and even more futilely to the extent of comparisons. And in fact, there's an abundance of market conversation and research that tells us that we can't do that, not easily, not at all. The charity watchdogs you talked about before, Carmela, are interesting, and it was June the 21st, I think, 2013, the three major charity watchdogs in America came out and said, we were wrong. We've been telling you for years you can compare organisations based on efficiency ratios and overheads, but we were wrong. You can't do that. You need to focus on other metrics. The challenge again is we have not caught up with that conversation wholly. And while we continue to hover around that question, we actually continue to reduce our effectiveness and efficiency rather than build it up. And that's okay, But it's not okay, because it actually takes us away from the problems we're trying to solve and the people that actually help us solve them. So I think there's a massive challenge around this question. And it starts with directors, and it also starts with executives to think about this. And if I really want to be challenging, and hell, why not? I'm leaving the country tomorrow. I think there is still too much evidence in play and market where there is light lifting in this regard. So my challenge to directors and executives, and I'm in both camps, is collectively, not you, you're all here sharing this conversation, so your colleagues who aren't, lift your game. We can talk more about how that might happen.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Nigel. Wendy, interested in your perspective on this question.
So just to follow on that note of challenge, not to insult any of my fellow board members, but rather to jolt them. I come to jolt, not to insult you. If I were to write a book on this, I think it would be a bestseller, and I would call it On Boards and Other Blunt Instruments, because I believe that it's just dreadful, the effect of poor measurement on our organisations. So I'm with Nigel on Lift the Game. And this is a responsibility for us all, not just those in this room. So I guess I endorse the comments of the previous speakers. I'd also like to highlight a couple of other points. I think there's real power in benchmarking. I think that we know in fundraising we have one of the most generous and open professions, and we know that we can manage better internally and we can protect better as a sector if we actually have good data to be able to work with. So there are some benchmarking activities that go on in our sector. I would like to see it far more uniform and far more data rich. We're in that age, and the younger people coming through in our organisations will have learnt data analysis, you know, from the earliest days. So we have huge positive potential. Things like the non-profit standard chart of accounts that Miles McGregor Lance from our centre pioneered, that is just as we speak being adopted by Canada for their non-profit sector, where you have a data dictionary, so at least you are talking about the same information that is being captured. We've got a long way to go, because we all know we haven't got a standard of reporting practice. We would love to see that. We would love to have the recognition from other sectors that in fact the non-profit sector is different and that the measures are different. So I'd like to see that at a basic level. We've just done some work with an Ian Potter Foundation scholar who's been with us, who's been looking at how many reserves our non-profit organisations should actually keep. So we've had a look at the ACNC data, which of course is in its very early days, therefore not much use to anybody. And I say that with the best will in the world, knowing that it's great that we have that start. But, you know, if you're a different sized organisation, or if you're an organisation from a different part of the country, a different age of organisation, so many factors impact on how well that data is reported to fine detail. So I guess we're committed to trying to do some more with that. I would also talk about the donor loyalty cry in the wilderness. In terms of the measures, we are really lacking on the soft measures. I'm part of the Association of Fundraising Professionals Research Committee, which is why I have bags under the eyes, because they meet at the wrong time of the day or night. And they have this fundraising effectiveness project that is worth a visit on their website. They were highly perturbed, as we all should be, by the fact that 70% of people don't go on to get a second gift. Mm-hmm. Is there a sadder indictment as to our activities? Is there a more important measure for a board than to have a look at what are we doing to look after those people who have broken from the mould and supported our organisation? Two other things quickly, co-design. Fundraisers know a lot about what they're talking about, plus there will be lots of other people that you can draw in to talk about what are your board metrics. There's enormous generosity and intelligence in this sector, so we do have that capacity to draw in that. I would also suggest that you spend $60, I think it's still $60, and purchase online a book by Malabone and Barmer. Guy Malabone is a fundraiser consultant from Canada. He has a matrix of the things that an organisation needs to look at to measure itself.
and there's a heap of them that are that impact fundraising. It's a very easy read, it's a very useful and applicable document. I think you may even get it free these days because it's a little bit older, but the questions are still gold.
Thank you very much. When
I
get
to the gratuitous plug for ACPNS. Wendy and her predecessor, Miles McGregor-Lowndes, have done some awesome work in the sector for decades now in pumping out some quality research that sadly is not accessed as much as it should be. I know Joe Toomer looks at this stuff, he's a graduate from the centre, so snaps Joe, but we actually need to avail ourselves. And this is where, again, part of the challenge that I put out to, again, directors and executives, to spend a bit of time around this. We still spend too much time around myths and fables in terms of what we think we measure. Told not so long ago that people compare. Well, I'm sorry, but I actually haven't seen the evidence of that. If you read a wonderful body of work that Glenn Paul and Ted Flack and Miles and Stephen Marsden put out in 2014, I think, around looking at fundraising annual reports, I mean, they're quite clear about that in terms of that inability to measure, in fact, people don't in that context. So I think we've got to get our story straight, but there's some great work in the sector that is present and is very, very solid, and that's one of the easier pieces to do. But just if you haven't already found your way to the Australian Centre for Philanthropy and Nonprofit Studies, do so immediately. I can easily give that plug because I only endorse it, but I think it's really important. And again, just to the question on metrics, as organisations, we will find our way if we are moved to define measures that are useful and instructive and longitudinal. So again, to the point you make, but if we are a sector that actually is quite open and sharing, but we need to avail ourselves of that.
Thanks, Nigel. Thank you. All right. So we move on to question two, which kind of leads on from question one, and that is to ask our panel members, how do your fundraising programs work together, and what programs, how do you know what programs are right for your organisation? And again, I think we'll have quite different perspectives, or I could be wrong, from our panel. And I wonder, Wendy, I don't want to jump on you, but would you mind leading off on this one, please?
Most certainly. And I guess that I think that there is too little respect for what fundraisers know and do. So I think that the first step here in terms of answering the question, how do your fundraising programs fit together, this is a question that boards really can benefit from sitting down with their fundraising teams or fundraising person to actually have a chat about. There's deep knowledge there, and I think that if there's not good calibre of fundraising people in your organisation, then you have an ability to bring in some support for that. There are many people who will volunteer their knowledge, who will be the 30-mile expert to answer those kinds of questions for you. So part of it is tools and audits like that one I mentioned, Balabone and Barmer, which tell you a little bit about assessing what your programs are. There's lots being written about the evolution of fundraising programs. So how do you start out if you're a small organisation? Obviously, it's not a simple join-the-dots process. You have to look at what it is that you've got to be able to work with. But there's any amount of simple tools that can guide your thinking and guide your strategy, and any amount of simple people like us who can give advice and will give advice. I think there are huge training gaps. I know that when Nigel put these questions together, they were intended as the key questions board members really need to pose of themselves. And I think that there are training gaps. I think that we in the fundraising sector are negligent, and we are not quite criminally negligent, but we don't set about telling board members and teaching board members and engaging board members in what fundraising really is, the philanthropic nature of it, not the the high pressure putting the hard word on someone, that sort of approach. That is the mythical view of what fundraisers are all about. I think as well that to be able to understand that variability amongst age and size of organisations, the type of area that you are in, your fundraising history. I think all of these factors feed in to what sort of fundraising programs you have and how they fit together, plus the word integration, which is, you know, not to have all of those silos out there, but you as board members, as the helicopter people, being able to resource integration, but also the culture of philanthropy within your organisations that sees you engaged in that, but the different parts of your fundraising and your whole organisation engaged in the fundraising programs. Fundraising is an attitude, not a department.
Everyone's noting that one down. Fundraising is an attitude. That's the way to build a culture. Thanks, Wendy. Nigel, we'll go backwards okay. This time. Yes, you go next, please.
Okay. Where to start? I think that just picking up a couple of things that Wendy challenged us with. Look, there is culpability, I think, amongst fundraising practitioners, and part of that challenge is learning how to speak board and executive. If we could somehow create, for those that are read or seen the movie Chaka's Guide to the Galaxy, if you're not, we need a Babel fish, okay? That sort of translational piece that can actually help us shift the language. I will be challenging and critical of colleagues in fundraising practice who continue to talk fundraising lingo or jargon when we actually need to speak in the language of directors and executives to actually get that message across. But again, I'm not going to actually let directors and executives off the hook easily here. You actually need to lean in and understand what it is you're dealing with. I've heard too many times, let's just do bequests. That's got a great ROI. Where the hell do you think your donors are going to come from if you just do bequests? Give it a whirl. Actually, if you're inclined that way, go and try that. Come back in 5 years and tell me how you've gone. It's not going to work, people. Or let's run some events. Again, the terrible news I have for you is events on their own will never make a lot of money, no how big they are. They will cost you a lot of money. They are not there just for the money. In fact, they're really there for the people. We run a major lottery. Now, in the spirit of absolute disclosure, Carmel Minchie's on two boards. One of them is mine, okay? So we run a large lottery. People often say to us, how would we go about running a lottery? My answer is don't. Not because we're trying to protect a patch here, but it costs us tens of millions of dollars just to be in the marketplace. Now, if you've got the appetite for that, then that's terrific, but that's really not where the game is run away. You see, it's around data. Looking at Robert here, you know, who works in that space. And so for us, it's about the supporter base, which we've spent a lot of money to build and maintain. That's where the secret sauce lies. So it's not about prizes. It's not about ticket price. It's not about any of those things. You know, I still get questions from people to say, who donates your prize homes? That's actually just a little bit of a silly question, with the greatest of love and respect. But all of this is really about how we think about these programs as a connected series of a whole. And as Wendy's touched on, not everything is right for you. So if you see something working wonderfully well for an organization, and I've seen this play out in the sector over many years, let's do what they are doing. Which often translates to let's run a golf ball, let's run a ball, let's do something else. Again, please don't. Can you not do it? Think about what is right for you and your constituency, and who are you talking to, and why are you talking to them, and what is that long game you're playing, and how the connected parts of the whole will be fitting together. And again, measure them collectively, which is when we come back to the failures of measurement. When you pick up a whole and try and measure it together, it will tell you nothing useful. You can't do anything about it. So again, if we're benchmarking, you can start to break that down a bit more and looking at the constituent parts, but again, only considered in terms of the whole. So thinking about the construct of fundraising programs, and probably the first thing to think about is, it's not about the money. It's about what you are doing to build and sustain your constituency, to create the pathways for donor engagement through different giving modalities. And even recognising that donors will give through different modalities over time, as their particular situation in life and experience with you changes as well. And often in multiple modalities similarly, and often, again, surprise, surprise, to multiple causes at the same time. So the challenge, I think, is thinking differently about what you are doing in market and how you are going about it and how you're investing in that. And again, critically, what is the long game? And if those
If that's the framework that you exercise that view, and again, this is directors, executives, fundraisers alike, then you'll start to get some traction, I contend. And to Wendy's first point, if you're hiring a fundraising professional or practitioner, rule number one, listen to them.
Thanks very much, Nigel. And I think, you know, comments that we've heard, and I'll pass you a minute, Carmel, you know, I think the taking the client focus or the donor focus in the conversation that we're having, donors speak with their wallets, their commitments and their affinity. And if 70% of donors aren't making a repeat gift to all of our organisations that we represent here, I would suggest that that's the fundamental issue that we need to be looking at. So, thanks, Carmel. Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, well, I will come to it from a director's perspective. And you mentioned, Simone, earlier about studying fundraising, and I suppose some people would wonder why I went and did that. I come from a marketing background, a corporate strategy background. And when I started my director career, I realised that I would need to undertake some studies in, you know, becoming a director and understanding the roles and responsibilities of being a director. So I undertook the company director's course and a range of other courses after that, and studied in, you know, law and ethics and strategy and risk, etc. So I could add value in the boardroom. You know, I did courses at AICD and Women on Boards and Governance Institute. And then, of course, I joined my first not-for-profit board. And, of course, I didn't realise that when I joined a not-for-profit board that had significant revenue coming from fundraising, that I really needed to be fundraising literate, not just financially literate. We talk about board directors being financially literate, but no one ever says that when you're on a not-for-profit board that you need to be fundraising literate. And I didn't do this just to support fundraisers. I did it because of developing the financial sustainability of the business. So when we talk about fundraisers presenting and talking to board directors in their language, this is the way I look at it. You know, and when I talk to other directors, this is the way I present it to them. It's talking to other directors about the success of the business and about the role they have in contributing to the bottom line success of the business. Yes, I'm there obviously to support our fundraisers, and I'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about some of the other questions. But it's about how can we ensure the sustainability of the business, because in some of the organisations that I am on the board on, fundraising is a very significant proportion. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the fit of, you know, the programs and them working together, you need to have a good enough understanding of what is best practice. But that applies whether you come from a marketing background or an accounting background. Fundraising is no different. You need to have a good enough understanding from marketing to ask those questions of marketing. You need to have a good enough understanding from accounting. So why would you think that fundraising is anything different? It isn't. It's not. So why should it be treated anything differently? You know, you need to, as a director, to know what's right. You need to learn, you need to be listening, which, you know, Nigel was talking about, listening to our fundraisers, and ask the right questions. And you can only do that if you're fundraising literate.
Yeah, agree completely. Carmel, fundraising is a profession, and it's a sophisticated profession that needs to be understood, all, like the other disciplines that you mentioned.
Just have a note of warning to directors here. I mean, it was the James Hardy case some time ago now, but I think it's famously etched in director teaching and learning around the responsibility of directors individually to understand finances. So I'm seeing some nods amongst those of the directors. I guess the story, it didn't limit itself to finances, folks. It means all things in terms of your director responsibility. So that includes fundraising, and I can't emphasise enough how painfully short of understanding, I've witnessed director conversations around these themes. So again, it is a serious challenge and one to step up to, because on balance, we're a long way short.
So that leads very nicely into our next question, which is about the understanding about philanthropy and fundraising from each of the perspectives. And I guess, Carmel, not to put you too much on the spot, you've obviously got yourself some knowledge around the profession, and you can influence at the board table and in your other roles. Have you got any other advice for all of us on how we can I guess, educate, inform and engage with folk at the board level about fundraising and give them, I guess, the fundraising literacy that you have without sending them to a course, perhaps, to do that. Unless the course is the only answer, and we're open to that as well.
Yes, Simone. You know, I think board directors, when they take a position on a not-for-profit board, they are doing it from a philanthropic perspective. They do want to give. They're giving their time and their energy, their skills, their abilities, their passion and their enthusiasm. And, you know, I've been on many a board when they've been asked to financially give, and they've said, well, hold on a minute, I'm already giving. So, you know, I don't need to give any more. And I said to them, but hold on a minute, we're asking donors to give. So what's going to happen when a donor says to you, well, are you giving? You know, how are we going to respond to that question? And then they've all sat back and went, oh, I see, okay. That might be quite a difficult discussion to have. And so I take that role of trying to be an advocate on the boards that I am for fundraising, and sometimes being a little bit challenging, which I think Nigel and Wendy would endorse. But it doesn't mean that board directors truly understand what fundraising is. So I think their hearts are in the right place.
Yeah.
I think, and I'll talk a little bit, I think, later about how I can inspire some directors to learn a little bit more about fundraising. But just talking about Wendy's research and board directors trying to access some of this and really accessing it, I think Wendy's research that was done in 2013 about who's asking for what was really alarming when I it talked about board participation and engagement and fundraising, basically saying that it didn't go far enough, basically saying that directors lacked a clearly communicated expectation that fundraising was part of their role.
Yeah.
So, you know, it isn't really all directors' fault, because for a lot of boards, when they join a not-for-profit board, they haven't been educated that this is going to be part of their role. So they haven't formed a good understanding of fundraising and they don't know it's part of their role. And I've been in these discussions when board directors have said, well, I didn't know that that was going to be what I had to do. So don't now confront me that I have to do this and I wasn't told that. So there's an enormous amount of education that needs to be done, not just about what fundraising is, but that now it's part of my role.
Yes, yes. Setting those expectations from the very beginning, incredibly important, yes. Nigel, apart from all of your years of experience and tomes of study, what informs your understanding on a daily or regular basis about fundraising and philanthropy?
Well, I think it's actually about seeking to be informed. There's a fabulous blog and opinion piece on Regare, which is a critical fundraising think tank about intellectual curiosity. It may have been written by someone who resembles someone on this panel, but nonetheless, about shameless, gratuitous plug. What I'm really challenging in this commentary is I think that in the fundraising sector, we lack collectively, not individually, intellectual curiosity to the extent that it could be exercised. And again, it's not everyone, it's just a factor. And I think the same is true from my observation at directorship and executive level, and again, I'm going to continue Carol's theme of giving Wendy and her team a plug as well, but the work that you and Katie and Alex did about 6 years ago now, wasn't it? Is that right?
Yes, it is. I'm embarrassed.
No, don't be embarrassed. That's absolutely. No. But it talks squarely to the role of a CEO in being that champion and advocate. And again, I think there's a real challenge that, you know, again, I'm fortunate like you, Sam, and I'm CEO of an organisation with specific purposes around fundraising, so we have no excuse but to do that. But that aside, I think that's still a leadership responsibility. But it also talks about, again, from an evidentiary perspective, the perhaps lack of understanding that boards have in this area as well, and I think the gaps that can occur. So I think that we need to move past this idea of what informs us. And one of the challenges we have, particularly talking about fundraising, is it's so accessible. Everyone's experienced it in some way, whether it's through, you know, schools or sporting clubs or churches or whatever. So our experiences around fundraising are sort of fairly universally formed. It reminds me of that
that Yakka ad from years ago when the guy barges his way down the jetty and says, "Don't tell me about boats, I know boats," and steps through a boat. And it's kind of, I get images in my mind around that. Tell me about fundraising, I know about fundraising. Well, you know, you don't. I still remember the first course I went to in fundraising training when I came into the sector. It was the July of 1984. I'm looking around the room. Maybe some of you might have been born then. But I came away thinking, my God, I really don't know enough about this practice. I'm never going to learn it. So how do you actually challenge yourself in terms of building a body of knowledge over time? And that never stops.
No.
But I think the question, and really to Carl's challenge is how do you think about what your responsibility from a leadership point of view, or we'll talk about leadership a bit later on, but how do you actually think about that and challenge your own knowledge set and what informs that knowledge set to test if in fact has it been so? And if it's not so, well, there might be a question around that. Where do you go to seek out that information? And yes, we still are an emerging sector in many ways, but we are becoming more replete with research and literature and informed pieces around a knowledge set. And I think the excuses for not knowing something are thinner and thinner.
Mm. And speaking about knowledge and good practice, Wendy, your thoughts, please.
I must say I'm enjoying people saying nice things about the centre and the research. It doesn't always happen in the university, so this is very good for my ego. So I guess the reason that we started that research was we knew the field, we knew it was an issue, but we also read some research from the States, the Compass, the board source research, where they talk to directors and CEOs on a yearly basis, and they look at the key 10 abilities, skills that are needed for success. And year after year, decade after decade, guess what was number 10? Fundraising. And nothing changed. And how depressing is that? So we thought, okay, well, we'll have a look at it here and just see if we can bring some evidence base to get the conversation going. And I guess what we found is that, you know, that level of understanding is quite low for reasons that are not board members' faults. So basically, in our survey, no board member was given any training in fundraising on joining the board. No board member. Position descriptions that included fundraising for board members. 17%, which I was quite heartened by. I thought, well, that's a bit higher, that's a bit better. But I don't know that it's moved very much. So in context to that question, what do you really understand about fundraising? The answer is probably not much, because no one ever told us, as Carmel said, that we in fact needed to do that. And the goalposts have been changed while the game's in progress. All of a sudden, we're supposed to be this element of being able to finance the organisation. How do you acquire that knowledge? I think that you acquire it by doing it in one way. I do believe that board members, for me the phrase or the song multiplication, that's the name of the game. You've got very often a single fundraiser in your organisation who needs to be the hub, not the wheel. They need to be the person who is equipping and being the wind beneath the wings of all those people who can take the organisation out, and to be able to take the organisation out is not that difficult. Fundraising is storytelling. Yes, it's important to know about these other elements, but not everybody on the board needs to know about feasibility studies or direct mail return or whatever it might be. But you do need to have a cadre of people on the board that get this and go along to Fundraising Institute conferences and actually find out what's going on in innovation in this area, and talk with other boards about fundraising. You know, that would be an interesting community of practice, boards and fundraising. But really, I think that, you know, in terms of what you learn, Kay Sprinkle Grace, a very very famous octogenarian, who's just released another book in the last week, I think, on boards and fundraising, talks about a triple A rated board that you have. People who are advocates, you have people who are ambassadors, and you have people who are askers. So I think board members get put off by fundraising because they think they're just going to have to go and ask people for money, and if you haven't done it, it's a jolly confronting thing to do. There are some people for whom it's natural and they're your askers. There are some people who are just great connectors, great friend makers, great relationship builders, and those people are your ambassadors, and your advocates are those who really know the case and the numbers and the story of your organisation in a way that's very compelling. Fundraisers can't get to the same levels or networks as board members can, so that's a key thing that that board members can do, is just do it. Just and go along with your fundraiser or whoever else on your board is a really good asker. Listen, see what they do. This is how we all learned, listening to good folk about how they just conduct a meeting. And there's any amount of information about it. I would say as well, there's heaps of stuff on the net these days with blogs, or else go and have a coffee with someone who does this well. It's an extraordinary generous area and people will help.
Or perhaps some TED Talks, Wendy. I think we need some TED Talks.
Absolutely, TED Talks. I was going to say as well, for those organisations that can afford it, I've been recommending for years that good consultants in this area actually start to work with boards and with individual board members who are interested in this, because I think that coaching is a very strong way for organisations to grow. But I think that can also be done in a bit of a social enterprise way, but that's a longer story.
Simone, I'm going to make a really bad habit of another word, sorry, I'm just warning you now. But even these terms get conflated, and so we get lost straight up where we interchange philanthropy and fundraising and use other terms that somehow perceived as a bit nicer and more comfortable. Well, that's simple to understand. Philanthropy is an idea, it's a sense of something, it's love of people, from a simple definition. And fundraising is an action that actually enables that, because it was Beckers and Wheatley, wasn't it, in 2007 that identified that 85% of gifts given come through asking. So if we just want this soft, fluffy, comfortable approach to let gifts happen, then let's settle for the 15% and get on with life. Or if we want to do stuff, we've got to ask. And that's fundraising.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Build strong communities and have a compelling case and then ask. And then thank and steward and take them on the donor journey. Absolutely. All right, we better put our skates on. Next question, please. Thanks, Sarah. We covered a little bit of this, but I think we'll just spend another moment, if we can, about the leadership lens and how important leadership is to developing a culture of philanthropy and empowering excellence in fundraising in all of our organisations. Who would like to kick off? Looks like it's you, Carmel. Be delegated.
I had a big choice there.
And you hinted at some of that in your earlier remarks. So, if we could just focus on the leadership component, particularly, please.
Well, considering the difficulties and the lack of support from board members, and I was realising this a number of years ago, I decided that I needed to act. So I did complete some education. I started attending seminars and conferences to start to build my knowledge, to champion the fundraiser's cause, but also, as I said earlier, I really saw it as the director's responsibility to improve the financial sustainability of the businesses that I sat on. So what I thought I'd do is just to highlight a few strategies that I executed on various boards that I sat on, just to give some examples. So kind of under the heading of education, I met with the chair of one of the boards I was on to present some evidence material and case studies, and certainly some of Wendy's research was in there, to really see if I could bring this chair around, who came from a skill base that was not fundraising or money, to really educate, because I felt if the chair wasn't on board, then we were really going to grapple. I encouraged the CEO and the fundraising director to start presenting to the board to really educate the board overall and to really bring their support around and improve their knowledge. And I shared key learnings from seminars and conferences. In fact, one of the boards I was on actually paid for me to attend one of these courses on the condition that I would then come back and present. And that certainly made them aware of what was going on, and I wanted to present to them so they understood what their role was and how they could really contribute to the success of the business. So, this happened over a number of years. I did, a range of these strategies. And then from an advocating point of view, I demonstrated the importance of fundraising by appointing another director, so we talked about this before, with fundraising skills. So it wasn't just a lone voice, so there was a couple of us. So when we did the skills matrix, and this was discussed at length, that we needed another fundraising director, and certainly this was supported by the fundraising director and even the chief executive that we had on board. We formed a fundraising committee, and this happened on a couple of boards I was on, and I was fortunate to be the chair of that board. And then, of course, you create a bit of a groundswell then, because the fundraising director is then supporting, they're coming into the board more often, the board's becoming more educated, so over the years then you really get a bit of a groundswell. And we had a major capital campaign that was starting at that time, so we knew that we really needed to have the whole board on board if this was really going to happen. So, and then we were talking, I think Nigel raised this point about, or Wendy, about amending the board position description to include fundraising, but also to include that the giving of a financial gift. And this was met with some controversy around the board table. I think we had like a half an hour discussion on this at one board meeting, but no, it stayed in. And of course, you know, there was reaction of, well, I can't give a $5,000 gift like someone else might be able to. But it was all about making it a philanthropic priority. That's what it was about. You know, and if you can only give $50, well, that's fine. But it's to be able to handle those questions of when a donor comes up and says, well, you know, are you giving? Well, yeah, I am giving, and this is a philanthropic priority. And I say that now when I get many, many charity calls. I say, look, I'm through not-for-profit boards, and they are my philanthropic priorities, and I can say that with my heart over my hand, hand over my heart. You know, so that's just a couple of examples. But, you know, you never can let up. Leadership has to continue in these areas. Yeah. You need to constantly continue advocating, because new directors join, there's new issues that you're confronted with, the overhead myth continues, so and you need to continue your education as well.
Yeah. Great tips there. Thank you very much, Carmel. Wendy?
Nigel's going to have the last word again, I can see. So I think, number one, you run an organisation that's worthy of community support. Because without that fundraiser, I haven't got a story to take out. So you do what you do as a director well, and you do what you do well by fundraisers if you actually are visionary with your organisation. If you are creating the kinds of programs that will, as my old friend Aubrey Banner from the Leukemia Foundation used to say, that exercise the mind and stir the heart. Because that's what fundraisers do, and that's what you as board members do. If you're going out and telling the story, you know, you are trying to really inspire people to be part of something special, something bigger than themselves, something that's absolutely vital in the community. So as board members, don't just tick it along. Look for the next most important thing that you can be doing for the people or animals or environment that you're serving. Live the mission, in other words, really believe it within you. It's not a meeting that you're going to. It's one of the most special nights of the month, because you're there changing the world. And I'm not trying to be, Pollyanna-ish. I truly believe that that's why people sit around that table. So take it seriously, make a difference. Raise your sights as an organisation, and that will be one of the biggest favours you can do for the fundraisers. Ask the right questions of the right people to get the right answers, so that you're leading a strong fundraising strategy. I think it's important, and I emphasise the word strategy. So it should be longer term. It should be looking 5 years ahead. It should be looking at what's going on in the environment. It should be talking to organisations like yours, or organisations overseas like yours, so that your sights are a bit different. Know as much as you can what you don't know. You know, education is a progressive discovery of our ignorance, and I consider myself highly ignorant. And that's a good thing. There's so much more to learn out there, but to be to feel that you are an expert in fundraising, I don't think actually any one of us is silly enough up here to describe ourselves as an expert in fundraising. People do it for me sometimes on conference brochures, and I get, you know, a little bit touchy about that. There's just so much depth and so much to learn. And it's a people-based skill, and it's just that, you know, understanding individuals and their values. That's a real challenge, but it's a robust one that's worth doing. Keep learning, as Carmel said, but be willing to make mistakes. It's not a perfect science. We all make mistakes with our fundraising, no matter how many decades we've been doing it. Nigel listed 35. Support sustainable growth. Resource your fundraising is one of the best things that you can do for your fundraisers. It takes money to make money. So don't try and penny pinch. One of the best things that the organisation that I worked for did was it would set aside an element of its budget every year for innovation. So the board will have the wisdom to be able to say, try something, and if it fails, well, next year when you try something different, that might be the winner. For us, that happened with Shade for a Cure, a little event that you might have heard that we tried, got an innovation budget. So think about trying and failing, because that's how you actually get further. Be a storyteller, as I said before. Be a presence at your organisation's events. Learn what it takes to run those events and to talk with the people about at those events, because they're the ones you're trying to engage. They've voted to be there. So take that one step further on their journey. Be an informed opportunist, and when you hear about something that might be a benefit to your organisation, people are always willing to do things for good community organisations. So invite them along to your organisation. Say, can I have a cup of coffee with you to find out more about that, because I work for XYZ organisation as a director, and we'd really love to learn more about that. You'd be surprised where that takes you in terms of volunteer support. And finally, as Carmel said, consider personal giving. This, of course, is a vexed area, and I don't think we are ever rude or unappreciative to our wonderful board members who give up their time. And I believe that the correct phrase is to consider personal giving. I don't believe that it should be mandatory unless you've got a whole new organisation and you've set that up by agreement at the outset that everybody's going to kick in a particular amount or kick in something. But I think that the Mitsubishi slogan, please consider, is to me one of the most valuable phrases that we as fundraisers have. I think that every board member should please consider that the organisation could really benefit from not just their skills and networks, but by their commitment through a donation. But I don't think we should ever expect it of a new board member. I think we should earn it. And I think we should set it up in those early conversations that have a look at what we do. We hope that you'll feel so that it's so important and that it's so worth supporting that you might yourself support. I would also be down the track having a conversation about giving being just a little bit about sacrifice. That real giving is in fact a bit of a stretch, and the return that you get and the glow that you get and what it means to you to look back on what you've actually done by going a little bit further than you probably had a plan to. That's the conversation worth having. That to me is philanthropy.
Thank you, Wendy. Nigel.
Yeah, a quick comment, but I think just to the point of giving, I think that there is a question for all of us to consider. How do you answer the questions when you're asking a donor to give and they ask you, what do you do? I'll do the same. So do unto others as though you would have them do unto you. A couple of things. Leaders got to lead. Step in. Your job is to make things happen, not through singularity, but through a shared process. So it's not just about what your view is. And again, as I'm looking around the room to make sure I don't get a defamation suit, from time to time, I have seen leadership get in the way for the very wrong reason. So know why you are there. Know your why. Know what the purpose of the organisation is. And your job is to make things happen. It's not all about environment agreement. Yes, a good contest and robust process to get there is absolutely critical. But your job is to do something. Your job is to accomplish something with social purpose. So understand how you contribute to that as a leader and what forms that in the context that you operate.
Thank you, Nigel. Now, I'm very conscious of time and we need to leave enough time for your questions. We have one final question, and I will really, I guess, sort of keep my wonderful panel very tight on this. Who are you employing in fundraising and why? So, would you like to... Yes, you go first.
Sure. I have to say that as a director, when Nigel put this question on there, I said, Nigel, why did you put this question on? I'm a director, I don't get involved in employing stuff. You know, generally I would have asked about the overall structure and I would have asked about the skill base. And the more I looked into this issue, the more I became aware of the impact that leadership has on this issue. How many fundraising staff are turning over, the lack of qualified staff that are leaving organisations very quickly because there is a lack of leadership. And once again, Wendy's research, which demonstrates that this is happening because boards are not showing leadership in strategic planning, they're not showing commitment to greater resources, they're not assisting in developing that internal culture of philanthropy. So, okay, directors don't really understand that it's a skill. They haven't been had that expectation that fundraising is part of their role. And yes, there's lots of research around that's indicating that this is important. But, you know, why aren't directors really failing to see that this is important and stepping up to it? Well, is it because they're not aware? Is it because they don't know it's that they're not aware it's a skill? Or is it because they don't believe it's their role? Well, I think it's all three. Mm-hmm. And unless they are speaking to management and management are educating them on this fact, then the situation's not going to be solved. I think both areas, management and directors, really need to be stepping up and showing true leadership in this area.
You got 1 minute.
Okay, I'll try and keep your time. I think it is a question that on first blush is more exercised in an executive domain than director's domain, but I'll just point you to the recent Chronicle of Philanthropy and Harris poll that talked about the churn and turnover in fundraising, which reiterated the data we saw out of Wendy's work from 6 years ago and also the Compass Point underdeveloped report at the same time. If fundraisers staying in the sector 16 to 18 months, staying in their role 16 to 18 months, you cannot do what you are there to do. If you also accept that there is no uniform knowledge pathway in fundraising practice, then how do you expect people to know what they need to know when they turn up for the job? If you hear management, particularly management, but even directors say, we can't afford to spend money on training, or if we train people, people might leave, then you're in the way. You actually need to invest in people to know what they otherwise might not know. So, directors and executives particularly have a responsibility in terms of thinking about who they are employing, what informs that employment, how it's supported, and how people are retained. And they are critical questions in the pursuit of fundraising practice, good fundraising practice, which has donors at the heart of its focus.
1 minute. Internal culture of philanthropy. Whose responsibility is it? It's the boards and the fundraisers, but the board has to lead it. Probably going to take you 5 or 6 years to get a great internal culture of philanthropy, and you're going to need a good fundraiser who is your partner in that. So who are you employing? You're employing yourselves. You are part of that equation so strongly, and then you have to get someone that you trust and that has a background that shows that they care about the community and that they care about their profession. So hopefully they're a member of FIA. Hopefully they've done some training, maybe the OCP nurse course. Hello, alumni around the room. And so also they'd be looking at something like the magnificent Margaret Scott's work, her thesis for QUT on around this area, which showed the qualities of good fundraisers, and Mark's going on and doing her PhD in this area. So there's lots of information out there. And are they a good fit? Every organisation is different. And it is absolutely vital, absolutely vital. Also talk to people. I'm always amazed about the people who do not talk to previous employers and go a bit beyond, you know. Dillis, you'd know all about this. You know, so make sure that your recruitment is spot on, because you can't afford a bad fundraiser. Our research with donors just says how damaging this is, particularly at your higher levels and chief requesters.
Thank you very much, Wendy. Thank you, panel. Do we have some questions in from our group, or are we going to have a little break now? Okay. We're just going to take a short break. Please enjoy your dessert and coffee, and we'll be back in a moment with your questions. Thank you. Don't.